Blog Talk Radio.
My name is Peter Beckman. Welcome to Dead Hollywood. The following text, with the exception of Keyes Madden's introduction, has been fashioned from a volume of very specific and richly detailed notes he inscribed in his journal during the time he spent in the place he refers to as Dead Hollywood. When he approached me more than 2 years ago about starting this work, I had definite doubts. But when I finally read the first 2 weeks of his journalistic entries, I rapidly changed my mind. Having co-authored an unfilmed screenplay with Mr. Madden, I knew that, and I hope he'll forgive me for saying so here, he was long on story formulae, but short on imagination. That he could have, in his spare time, cobbled together what you were about to read is an idea that I find impossible to entertain. He simply isn't capable of it. Keyes will undoubtedly tell you that I came to see him less than an hour after he was allegedly transferred to Dead Hollywood. This is true. We had made a breakfast appointment for that particular morning. When his phone machine didn't pick up, I drove the mile or so to his apartment. The door to his apartment was open, and after nobody responded to my knocking, I went inside. At once, I was made to feel that I was unwanted there. I suppose it was the general mood of the place. I had never been there without Keyes. A ringing filled my ears, then subsided. I had trouble hearing any street sounds. When I walked to the window, I noticed that Franklin Avenue was utterly devoid of automobiles. None parked at the curb, none resting in driveways, none traveling the street. All I saw was one lone young woman sitting in the curb a half block down, staring at me. Her look was not a friendly one. I figured that Madden had gone on ahead of me, so I left his apartment, and when I reached Franklin, I found I was rather pleased that the street traffic had returned, that cars were everywhere, and that the unfriendly girl was nowhere in sight. The events contained in Madden's narrative are in their original order. I was instructed to leave them that way. Despite the fact that I know three of the events occurred out of the order in which he wrote them, I have honored his wishes in this matter. Several people have asked me if I really believe that all this happened to Keyes. I'm going to read that sentence again. Several people have asked me if I believe all this really happened to Keyes. I reply that, like the venerable gent in Robert Conway's London Club, see Capra's Lost Horizon, I believe it because I want to believe it. So, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to propose a toast. May Keyes Madden find his dead Hollywood and the people he left there, from whom he learned, finally, how to begin his life. Peter Beckman. An introduction. Hollywood died one night and nobody gave a damn. I was there, I saw it. When I woke up in my apartment, having dozed off during a commercial break in Channel 9's Million Dollar Movie, Hollywood as I'd known it was stone cold dead. No searchlights lit the sky, no flags were lowered to half-mast, no obituaries appeared in the morning papers. Down at Musso and Frank's bar, the ghosts pretended they weren't really ghosts. They were silent for a heartbeat. Then they laughed their hollow laughter and ordered another expertly made martini, as though nothing at all had happened. And why should tonight be different from any other night? I'll tell you. Because Hollywood had died. The time of death was later fixed at shortly before 9 in the morning on a hazy Sunday. Traffic was non-existent, save for a fleet of empty tour buses parked near the Chinese Theater. When the ghosts over at ABC found out, they rushed a movie of the week into production, starring Meredith Baxter Burney, Burt Convy, and Betty White. The script was shitty, and as usual, they got it all wrong. Like most of us, Hollywood needed understanding. McCadden Place wanted to be wanted. The low-rent hotels on Wilcox could have used a receptive ear now and then. And Selma Avenue might have wanted praise. Hollywood had been doomed for years. Hadn't the signs been clear enough? Neither the warmth of the sun nor the sea's lulling rhymes gave solace to Hollywood as it lay dying. As the city lay calm and still, the spark of life flew out of its left ear. The town died an uncharacteristically undramatic death, and to make things worse, Roger Corman didn't get a second unit there in time. Overnight, the famous glittering tinsel of Hollywood turned into dull, toxic strips of plastic. Aside from myself, everybody was conveniently out of town at the time, although nobody was really in need of an alibi. The police might have called it death by misadventure, but they were at a convention in Las Vegas, and every titty-enhanced stripper in town had followed them there. Unofficial mayor Johnny Grant was in San Francisco, drumming up media attention for the town's colossal new renovations. The producers and PR people were in their bathrooms, inserting suppositories into place. The Scientologists were all off on their yachts. The studio people were away talking to the money people who had followed all the hookers to Vegas. The musicians were in Cabo. The punks, alkies, and dopers were sleeping it off. There was nobody around to give a shit the morning America's favorite township bought the ranch. Hollywood left behind a crisp, hollow, good-looking corpse from which no soul had risen to heaven. When Hollywood died, love, even as it once came to Andy Hardy, died with it. Faith and belief were politely asked to hang out somewhere else. I've seen the files. When I told Johnny Grant I didn't believe these files existed, he showed me where they're stored. File cabinet after file cabinet, all filled with tales of what happened to love when it met the realities of Hollywood, and vice versa. The records have been perfectly kept, a tribute to the art of accounting. They are frightfully complete, down to the last heartbreaking detail, such as a Tennessee film stock salesman's tragic one-night stand with his wife's best girlfriend at the Knickerbocker Hotel. The two of them probably never thought of it again, but their entire story exists in the files old Grant showed me, in a nondescript storefront with whited-out windows high in the Hollywood Hills. Johnny tells me it's difficult to keep secretaries there for more than a couple of months at a time, and I can see why. There they sit, gathering dust, file after file, describing all of Hollywood's most jealously guarded secrets in frightful detail. Love unknown. Love undone. Love all knotted up. There is love defiled and love betrayed, the thickest file of them all. Love at the beach, love on the outskirts of town. Meet me on Love Street. Here lies love. That's Hollywood, folks. Dead Hollywood at the very least, and that's only the half of it. Revenants have tagged the city streets with the remnants of their tattered souls. Didn't Jackie Collins once say that? That, you see, is why I call them revs. Understand that the Hollywood you always knew existed in the back of your mind, fascinated as it is with the detritus of pop culture, does exist. And for a while, I haunted it.
That was part one of Dead Hollywood by Peter Beckman, and I would like to welcome you to Mystic Records Radio. I have a song here for you, Madness in the City, and after that we will go back to part two of Dead Hollywood. Thank you for joining us.
Madden is my name, and I dislike resumes, so all you're going to get here are the bare statistics. As you can tell from my name, my mother was Dutch and my father English. Ours is a venerable family that hasn't had 10 quid to rub together for centuries. I grew up in England and moved to Northern California with my parents when I was 14. In no special order, I love art, women, movies, and women. And movies. Did I forget bourbon? Everything was nice and quiet around our house, until my father, one summer afternoon, took me to a revival of Dracula at the Classic Cinema in Notting Hill Gate. The gods and goddesses of fantasy and imagination became my kings and queens, and normal life became so mundane it was necessary for me to whip the state educational process in order to buy time for my true education, the movies. Once our family arrived in California, my parents made certain I saw every grade school therapist available. Every imaginable test was administered, and I aced them all. When I started making up some of the answers, the school administrators mistook me for a genius. It simply never occurred to them that I might need glasses. Once I got fitted with specs, I settled back into an academic career of quiet achievement, just enough work to get comfortably by, that served me well all the way through high school. My predilection for film left no time for college. Leaving home at age 18, I hitchhiked to Los Angeles and soon after got a job moving flats at Sunset Gower Studios. In 2 years, I was writing and directing commercials for a local TV station. This led to an excellent promo reel and This led to an excellent promo reel and admission to a prestigious Southern California art school where I had hoped to sharpen my skills to the point where I could write and direct feature films. I liked the teachers well enough, but the student body gave me the creeps. After a year, I was summarily tossed out for insubordination. Less than a week later, I had moved into an old pile from the silent era called the Chateau des Fleurs, notable for having once housed such Hollywood stalwarts as Lionel Barrymore, Jack Benny, and Greta Garbo. This Normandy-esque construct was situated 2 blocks north of Hollywood Boulevard on Franklin Avenue, a few blocks east of Highland. Thanks to a well-placed friend at Crown International Pictures, I soon got a gig writing a spec script, an old horror movie. The project went well, had been purchased, and the shoot was but a month away. I remember going to bed in a delightfully carefree mood the night I got the news. I was supposed to meet the director for lunch the next afternoon. That afternoon never came. When I awoke, the world I knew was gone. It had been replaced by an egregious nightmare I shall never forget. The first morning, I actually did think it was only a dream. And then I thought I'd died. My mistake. If I had been as all the other ghosts were in Dead Hollywood, it would have been much easier living amongst them. But once I realized I had slipped sideways into another version of Hollywood, I'd decided to heist an art book and keep a journal. Why heist? Your money isn't any good here, Mr. Torrance. Once back in the real Hollywood, several months passed before I could look at my journal again. My decision to publish it was based on the fact that none of my friends could even begin to believe I'd been to such a place. It seems that, in normal time, I had only been away a few hours. All I had for proof was the journal I'd brought with me, and why I was allowed to bring that is still a mystery. My friend Peter Beckman, who I had known at art school, was the only one who had listened to me. It seems that in the hours I was first in Dead Hollywood, he'd come to the chateau looking for me. I had totally forgotten about our breakfast meeting, and he had come to pick me up. He found my apartment door open and nobody about, even though at that instant, in Dead Hollywood, I was there, sitting at my kitchen table trying to figure out what the hell had happened to the rest of the world. Since I've returned to live Hollywood, I occasionally find to my horror that I miss the other place. But I haven't gone to seek it out. Dead Hollywood can come and get me any time it wants to, and I have the feeling that sooner or later it will. You know, unfinished business, that sort of thing. So mostly, I sit here in my rooms at the chateau and wait for the second feature to begin. Keys Madden.
Generation got it. Domination for my generation.
want to thank you for tuning in to Mystic Records Radio. That was the UK band Vomit with the song Damned Nation. And I shared with you some of our demo tapes for Dead Hollywood. It's going to be an audiobook coming out real soon. Of course, there's a lot of editing to do. And I shared with you part one and part two, and next time we will do part three and four. Well, you have a great day, and thank you for tuning in, and don't you forget to party or go home, and you have a great weekend. Thank you. Bye.